kids. Matt Segundo here, and it seems that our baton death march of investigative journalism is far from over. This is part 3 of our continuing Book Expo coverage, in which our young roving correspondent talks with publishers. He talked with everybody when he was there, and there's a little bit of slander concerning my character. Well, I trust the listeners will make up their own minds and figure out who might be telling the truth.
Okay, I am here with Paul Slovak, who is at Viking Press, but he's also the editor of T.C. Boyle, William T. Volman, all sorts of fantastic authors. Paul, how you doing?
Very good, very good.
So what are you working on these days, and how do you sort of manage, for example, Volman's prodigious output?
Well, it's a kind of carefully planned scheduling of all the many books that Bill, in particular, is always working on. He's the kind of writer that works on 4 or 5 books at once. I have actually just signed up a new book with Bill that won't be published until 2008, but it's a book he's been working on for 10 years, and I think it's going to be a very important book.
Is that Imperial?
It's called Imperial, and it's a book about Imperial County in California and using the history of Imperial to look at the U.S.-Mexico border, the migrant farmers, and kind of examine the history of imperialism in America. I finally got Bill to tell me how long this book was the other day, and I'm happy to report that it's in the mid 6 figures in terms of word count right now. So we're looking at about probably about a 1,000-page book, but it's wow. Pure genius. I think the people that like Volman are going to really love this book. He's got 2 new books coming from Echo Press, shorter books. One essay on poor people around the world, and then he's also working on a book about the No Theater, and he is writing a book about hobos, and he's also finally starting to get back to work on the rest of the volumes in the Seven Dreams historical series. How do I manage my work? I mean, it's like keeping 300 balls up in the air, but it's great fun. I'm the publisher of Viking, so I'm helping to figure out what we're buying and how we publish 100 books a year. I edit about 10 books a year myself. I do 6 works of poetry every year. I'm doing a lot of work on some of the backlist authors I work with, including Paul Auster and Jack Kerouac, and all sorts of things I'm doing, but it's a lot of fun.
What other titles, aside from the Volman stuff, do you have
coming up? Coming up soon. I mean, I just published A.M. Holmes' new novel. Yep. This book will save your life. In early July, I'm publishing a fabulous new novel by T.C. Boyle. It's called Talk, about a deaf woman whose identity is stolen. I only have 1 book in the fall that I've edited, which is a new biography of Allen Ginsberg that I think is going to be a very interesting book. It's the first full biography of Ginsberg. It's very closely based on his journals, so it's almost as if it's the closest thing I think we'll get to almost an autobiography by Allen. It's the 50th anniversary of the publication of Howl. And then I've got some great stuff coming up in early 2007, a new novel with Roddy Doyle. Adam Sisman, who's a very, very talented British writer, is doing a book about the friendship between Wordsworth and Coleridge. I'm publishing a novel by a very, a woman who's going to be a star on the international literary scene. She's a Turkish novelist. Her name is Elif Shafak, and she and Orhan Pamuk are the 2 Turkish writers that have been openly dealing with the Armenian massacre in their fiction. And what else do I have? Oh, and then I'm doing a memoir with A.M. Holmes.
Oh, really?
There was a shorter version of it published in The New Yorker about 2 years ago. It's called The Mistress's Daughter.
What does this memoir entail?
She was adopted the day that she was born. And 30 years later, her birth parents started to look for her.
Really?
Not having any contact with her up to that time. Her mother actually showed up at one of her readings in Washington in 1993. So the memoir is about how she dealt with this and the story of what happened and when her parents got back in touch with her, her birth parents, what happened afterwards, and then kind of following it up into a later period after her mother has passed away, in which she gets kind of totally obsessed with finding out everything she can about the family and hiring experts, you know, researchers to research the genealogy. But it ends up becoming a book about, it's not just about adoption, it's kind of about how you form a sense of self, the importance of the family, the whole feeling of seeing your parents in yourself. There's one chapter in the book that's called My Father's Ass, in which she tells about how when she first met her birth father, she knew that he was really her father because she had an ass like his. So that's some of the many things I'm working on right now. Got some very good poetry books coming up, too.
Oh, well, let's talk about those.
Total labor of love. Well, right now I published a new book with John Yao, who is a very talented Chinese-American poet and an art critic. And in the fall, I'm doing a new one selected with a poet named Robert Wrigley, whose last two books have won prizes. And also I'm publishing a very talented poet named Barbara Rass, R-A-S, who runs the Trinity University Press. She's a publisher too, but she's a very, very good poet. So it's, and then I've also been doing a very cool series with a guy out in California named Michael Rothenberg. We've been taking poets, West Coast, some beat poets whose books are all out of print, and making new one-volume selecteds. So we've done Philip Whalen, and we did one most recently with David Meltzer, and Joanne Kiger I did a book with, who was Gary Snyder's first wife and very interesting poet. And now I'm doing one with about Ed Dorn, a poet named Ed Dorn, who taught at the University of Colorado for many years, kind of a legendary poet, wrote a book called Gunslinger. Oh, that's it.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Paul.
Yeah.
Here is C. Max McGee, who has a report on what Mr. Segundo did last night.
I don't know what he did last night. It was terrifying. He was all over the place.
What made it so terrifying?
He had a look in his eye that was hard to place, and I think it put people off guard a little bit.
Yeah? So he scared the bejesus out of you, too.
And Matt Chaney, especially.
Matt Chaney, we're going to have to talk with him. Have you hit the Nightshade booth? Has he recovered from his unfortunate sort of Segundoization last night?
He seems to be doing okay, but I think scarred for life is probably the appropriate term.
Carolyn, I understood that you served as, or you pretended to be, I guess, Segundo's attendant, or you led him to believe that you were his personal assistant of some kind.
Mr. Champion, I'm sorry, I just can't talk about it. My sister called in sick, she made me work for this guy, and it was a nightmare. I can't talk about it.
You seem very, very sort of sad.
I would say maybe post-traumatic stress disorder is a little closer to it, so I think that's all I can say. Thank you.
Do you think that the Bat Segundo Show needs a new host?
Comment.
Wow. So I am here at the Akashic Punk Planet booth, and I'm here with two fantastically lovely people named Ann Moore and Dan Sinker. So maybe Ann and Dan, can you tell me about what's coming up in the pipeline?
We can. Punk Planet Books is a couple of years old imprint of Akashic Books, and we do about two books a year. And our next book is actually Joe Mino's latest, which I'll actually let Dan talk about. Yeah. He's got the pitter-pat down.
Joe Mino's the author of Hairstyles of the Damned, which was a hugely successful book that he actually wrote about 2 years ago. When he came to us, he actually was on HarperCollins and kind of gotten burned out on big presses, and took a huge gamble. And 65,000 books later, you know, is quite happy that he made the decision to come with us. And Boy Detective Fails is the follow-up, his next novel. It's a kind of a coming-of-age 30 story about a kind of Encyclopedia Brown type character named Billy Argo, who as a child could solve every crime and every mystery in his town of Gotham, New Jersey. And but as he and his sister who helped him solve these crimes get a little bit older, they start to kind of not understand the world as being this simple thing that they thought it was. And she ends up killing herself, and that kind of makes him spiral into depression and ends up institutionalized and is released from the institution at 30 and has to kind of square this world that makes no sense. You know, being a boy detective no longer helps you kind of figure out the mysteries of adulthood. So it's a really beautiful book, and there's a lot of playful stuff too. There's a decoder ring at the back to kind of help help him along in solving his mysteries. And
for those adults who are terrified of buying Cracker Jack today.
Exactly.
No need anymore. Just buy Joe Mino's newest Boy Detective Fails.
What about the noir collection? What's going on with that? I don't see any noir titles here. Is that pretty much... DC Noir. Oh, so sorry. It escaped my eye in Baltimore and Twin Cities. How many more cities are you going to be possibly exploring beyond the considerable sort of array you have right now?
Well, Akashic is actually the sole publisher of the Noir series, and so we aren't involved in them at all, but we do know that they do an ongoing sort of rolling submissions for new cities of the Noir series.
I think Scranton Noir and Des Moines Noir.
We were just talking about table dancing
Tallahassee Noir. Da Vinci
Code
Noir.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be awesome.
That's going to be a big one.
And, My Bathroom Noir is coming out in 08, I think.
Yeah. Really? My Bathroom Noir?
Yeah. It's going to be really...
Specifically Anne's bathroom.
Well, yeah, it's not your bathroom. It's my bathroom.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
3021 is warming. Make some humming sound. When its circuits duplicate.
Okay, so what is Self-Realization Fellowship Publishers? What is intended to be realized here?
Well, the purpose of Self-Realization Fellowship is to disseminate the yoga teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. And he came in 1920 and is best known for his life story, which is a spiritual classic, Autobiography of a Yogi. And it's considered the definitive introduction to yoga and yoga philosophy of any book that's been produced in the West.
Now, is yoga the only sort of thing you specialize in? Or?
Well, yoga is actually a philosophy and a religious path. And so all of our books... in one form or another, stem from yoga philosophy and the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, which are based in or rooted in yoga. And yoga is one of the systems of Hinduism. And what he showed, one of the things that Paramahansa Yogananda showed was the underlying unity between original yoga as taught by Krishna and original Christianity as taught by Jesus Christ. So he shows the commonality and harmony between the two religions and the common foundation of all true religions, and that is seeking God, and that is the goal of life, to find God. And yoga is a way to commune with God. It means union with God. That's what the term yoga means.
So one can choose any religion, it seems like, and be self-realized.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
What about if someone doesn't have a religion? Is it a similar kind of commonality? Are they finding God in a different sense?
Well, religion means to bind, and yoga means union with. So it's the concept of what are you binding with? Or if you don't have a religious interest, it's a matter of seeking. So there are people who start out as non-believers, and in fact Yogananda is one who used to say, don't just believe, experience, experiment, and actually experience connection through meditation. And that's why he called it a science, and that's why he calls religion a science, because through techniques such as yoga meditation, you actually begin to feel the presence of God. You're experiencing the presence of God. It may be as peace or as joy. You may see a light, hear the sound of Om, and that is the beginning of your communion with God.
Is God sort of an all-encompassing term, though? Or, I mean, how do we define God here?
Any way that... makes sense to you. God is can be defined in the personal, which a lot of people relate to, or in the absolute. It's that cosmic force that binds us all together. But people all have different ways of defining that. Spirit, divinity, cosmic force, the word.
Well, let's say I wanted to go ahead and, instead of referring to it as God, referring to it as, like, say, Ralph. So could I actually go ahead and switch the name and yet use the yoga process to sort of come to terms with Ralph?
What would the purpose be?
Well, no. I mean, if what we're defining here as God is some sort of all-encompassing force of the universe.
It makes no difference. What matters is where your heart is and where your consciousness is. You can call things whatever you want. I mean, semantics and linguistics are one thing, but what is felt and experienced in the heart or in the mind is what matters. Where your thoughts are, where they're directed. So if you want to call God Ralph or Mary or Divine Mary, as long as it's not done in vain or not done irreverently.
Some would say that calling God Ralph might be a little irreverent, though.
And it probably is, but God does have a sense of humor.
Well, that's good to know. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I'm here with Terry Akers of The Other Press. Terry, how are you doing? What do you have coming?
I'm doing well. The show's been insane, but we've got some great books coming this fall, especially Unconfessed by Yvette Christianis. It's a South African slave narrative, which there's definitely a shortage of, despite the fact that there are plenty of, you know, American slave narratives. And she's a poet, and it's beautifully written. It completely blew me away, and I have to say that a book hasn't done that to me in a while, and it's thrilling to be able to bring it to other people and to get Yvette out into the world. So,
what other titles do you have?
Leslie Epstein's novel, The Eighth Wonder of the World, is coming out this October. His last novel was San Remo Drive, and he's very famous, of course. His family is very famous, his son being Theo Epstein, his father and his uncle writing Casablanca and, you know, a million other things. But it's a novel of fascist Italy, and it's... the protagonist is an amalgamation of Ezra Pound and Buckminster Fuller. And he's an architect named Amos Prince, who's an American, but kind of out there and a little, you know, off his rocker. And he's trying to build a monument to Mussolini. And he has a young protege, Max Chabalon, who is helping him to construct the tower. And as World War II approaches, and he tries to use the tower to save the Jews of Italy, and of course it ends catastrophically. But
I'm going to go ahead and talk about this whole Other Press thing, and what put the other in Other Press for us here.
We're a fairly young company. Our publisher is a Lacanian psychoanalyst, and the press started out publishing mostly psychoanalytic titles. And in the last 5 years or so, we've branched out to pretty much everything else. We've got poetry, we've got literature and translation, general fiction, historical fiction, academic titles, cultural studies, Jewish studies, the list goes on and on and on. And we also have a literary imprint called Hansel Books. Harry Thomas is the editor-in-chief, and The Eighth Wonder of the World is actually coming out under the Hansel imprint. And we're a small company, and we have a very dynamic working relationship among the editors and our publisher and the people in charge, and it allows us to do a lot of very different and interesting and eclectic things, and always changing, and can never quite know what to expect from us. So.
Hey, well, thanks so much, Terry. Okay, I'm here with Camille March of Grove Atlantic, and I understand that Michael Tolkien is coming back with a sequel to The Player. Maybe you can tell us about that and what else is coming out from Grove Atlantic.
Yeah, we're really excited about The Return of the Player. Michael, it's a sequel, as you know, to The Player, the hit book and movie, and it takes place 6 years later, and it continues the story of the player himself, and this time he's a little bit down and out, and he kind of has to make his fortune back.
Okay. Oh, well, what else do you have coming out?
Yeah. The book I'm most excited about for fall is called Birth. It's by Tina Cassidy. Tina has been a reporter for the Boston Globe for the past 12 years. And when she became pregnant for the first time, she went looking for sort of a history of birth. And instead, all she found were books like What to Expect When You're Expecting and pregnancy books and how-tos and what have you. And she realized that this book was needed. And people were asking for it online, whatever. So she did meticulous research, and she put together this beautiful book. It's sort of anecdotal history of birth, everything from ropes and pulleys to, there's a chapter called Too Posh to Push about the trend for voluntary C-sections. But it's kind of told in like a Mary Roach kind of, you know, storytelling kind of style, very accessible, but like I said, meticulously researched. It's really excellent.
Anything else that's pretty notable here?
Yeah. Andrew Bleckman, also a journalist, wrote a book called Pigeons, and he went across America, sort of exploring America and outside of America's interest in pigeons. He talked to Mike Tyson, he talked to gourmet chefs, he talked to pigeon racers, he has a chapter on the Queen, and his conclusion is pigeons are man's best friend, second only to dogs.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Kim. Okay, so I am here with Alan Davis of A.S. Davis Media Group. Hey, come. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Why did you call it Alan S. Davis Media Group as opposed to A.S. Davis?
Well, those are my initials, make it easy on people, but short and to the point. And the point is that we publish books that we think of as extraordinary guides for extraordinary travelers. So we're focused on the extraordinary, the high end of quality peak experiences whenever somebody goes someplace. If someone's traveling, why would they want to waste time doing the wrong thing or being in the wrong place at the wrong time? So what we're trying to do is capture that, the very top end of a good experience, whether it be for historical travel or whether it be city travel.
Well, what makes your particular city guides? You gotta sell this to us. Okay. What makes your city guide so extraordinary?
Well, basically, we work harder than everybody else. And the way it shows is, for example, there's only...
The general fatigue, the sweat dripping down your right...
See, look at me. Look at my gray hair. And that's from working too hard. And the kind of work we do is to make sure that our writers are right on the mark and picking out the very best places. Not only that, we recommend the time to be there. I mean, there's a big difference between being on a cruise, say, early morning and during sunset. And we tell people, this is when you have to be there. So we do an itinerary. We also divide the books into three themes. Hot and cool is one, hip and classic. So it's designed for whatever personality you want to approach the city with.
And but it seems particularly designed for Marshall McLuhan disciples.
No, I don't think so. I think it's really for people who are looking for fun.
The city guide is the message?
I think the city guide is the message. There you go. But it's really, it's about fun. And it's for adults. Young people, they know how to have fun. But you reach a certain age and somehow fun disperses. So we're trying to show people that you can still have fun and be over 25.
I'm over 25. I'm having quite a lot of fun.
You are. How do you do that?
It's called...
Are you using one of our guides?
No, actually, it's called sort of prolonged immaturity.
No. Well, you see, that's exactly the problem, that people associate fun with immaturity, and that's a wrong concept. Fun is simply the idea of letting your hair down and being natural. And we're trying to encourage people to meet people. Most guidebooks are all about getting away from people. Our guides are getting together with people. Like... the path can't be beaten enough for us. So it's that excitement that cities offer. That's why we write about only the coolest cities, because you go there and you want to feel the excitement of the city, and we're trying to show people how to take advantage of that.
Okay, well, here's a question for you. Do you leave enough of your details? I mean, you can't just dictate fun to people. Everyone has a different sort of sense of fun. So do you create enough ambiguity here?
Yeah, we do.
So that people can figure out how to have fun in their own respective and interesting way.
Well, we start to do that by dividing the book into those themes, hot and cool, so people pick their personality. But you hit a really important point, because if a person goes to a city, they're going to get, without any help at all, they're going to get about 50% of the experience. They get a typical guidebook that suits them. They might get it up to 75%. We're trying to go from 75 to 90%. And then the last 10% is serendipity, and how, as you say, how the person really captures the city in their own way. And once they do that, that's as good as it gets.
But, I mean, aside from, like, sort of the unusual sort of categorization by temperature and the like, or hot, cool, and all that, I mean, do you, like, devise the descriptive copy to sort of, like, you know, not tell the whole story about the place, to sort of, like, you know, seven veils of, you know...
Well, again, remember, we're trying to provide people a way to choose what they want to do. So we give them enough detail so they know that they're not going to be in a place they don't want to be. That's as good as we can do. So we identify the noise level of restaurants and nightlife, which is unusual for a guidebook, because noise is really an important factor for most people, whether they like a place or don't like a place. Yeah. We tell people where they can sit to get the best
vantage point for either the scene or the, you know, the view or whatever it is. We're guiding people, but you're exactly right. Ultimately, it's up to the individual or the group to get their own experience. All we can do is lead them to the water.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.